accession number 223-55, Rail 3.
Fred Wiltshire, Rail 3. So you were telling me about the problems capturing the barracks at Bremen.
Bremen, that's right, yeah. That was in an eight, two or three days or a week running to get the Germans removed from the barracks.
Why do you think they put up so much resistance when it was the tail end?
Well, this always beat me. I don't know why they did it. I've said this all long enough, and when we went over the Rhine, that I couldn't understand why the Germans didn't give in near them, but they fought really to the bitter end, all the way through, from in Germany, right the way through to Bremen, and from Bremen, and they never give up in Bremen until the last, until we really routed them at these barracks and that, and they eventually give themselves up. And from there, after they give themselves up, we moved into Germany, into where these displaced people were being held, like the Poles and the Russians and other, what names. And then while we was there, we were detailed to feed these displaced persons. So we used to go down to the German slaughterhouse and get the meat and the potatoes and all this in the vehicles, and we used to grain these displaced persons, like Poles, Russians. And at these camps, there was a platoon of machine guns designated at every camp where we fed these, what names, to keep the Russians in the camp or keep the Poles in the camp, because they're very aggressive, they were. And we used to get the food and take these potatoes and this meat and all that into them. And of course, at times they didn't want to unload the vehicles because they just turned and said, well, you're not giving us enough food. But we said, well, we can't get you any more food because that's all we're given to give you. In times they refused to unload the stuff, so we had to get the machine guns out and say, look, unload the vehicles. And they used to unload them after a bit of a conflab. But night times, they had sawn off 303s, sawn off butts, sawn off the barrels and all, and they'd go out and shoot a bullock in the field and cut lumps off this bullock and bring them back for their own feed. I mean, it was just sheer waste of, because the rest of the food just lay there and rotted. But then we was there about a month. We had all this food, we had tins of milk, they had everything, you know, everything provided for them. And then we was relieved by another division, and we pushed back into Belgium, into Ghent. And that's where after we got to Ghent, we just stopped, and we was there about a fortnight. We got rid of all our equipment. And do you want to stop there, do you not?
We won't go into Palestine. Whereabouts were you looking after the DPs in Germany?
In Germany, I couldn't tell you the place, number one man, and I don't really know, no idea.
I think there are one or two things you've forgotten from the earlier campaign in Northwest Europe, if you can go through those.
Yes, right. I go back to Normandy. About 3 days after we landed in Normandy, there was a platoon of us, and we was up against a group of Germans in this like orchard place, but there was a brick wall around it. And of course we had a lot of sniping from this brick wall, and this Sergeant Rowland said to us, he said, we've got to move these Germans out of here, he said, anyway. So he said, he told us then to give them cover and fire, and well, he went up there and chucked an hand grenade over, and we give them cover and fire with the machine gun, because we couldn't hit the Germans because we were only firing the wall or either end of the wall. So anyhow, he chucks the hand grenade over and gets back to us, and all of a sudden, two or three Germans comes out with a white hanky on top of their rifle, give themselves up, and beat three, I think it was, come out, and they come marching down to us and give themselves up. And of course, we started to move around a bit, and all of a sudden, the Germans opened fire on us again from this brick wall, beyond this brick wall. So he said to us, when this first lot came back, he said, I think it's a bit of a catch, as he said. He said, they think they've all given in, like, you know. So he said, what I'll do again, he said, give us cover and fire again. He said, I'll go up to that brick wall, and he said, I'll chuck some grenades over. He said, and two of you creep up over the end of the wall, he said, with your stain guns, he said, and and give him a, when I chucked the grenades out, the grenades, give him a birthday in there, he said, and that's what he did. He chucked these grenades over, and he laid low, and these two chaps went up either side, and they opened up with a Sten gun, and most of them got killed with the grenades and the Sten guns. But there was about 30 or 40 behind this wall, and these other, and they three gathered themselves up. And this side, and he warned us, he said he thought it was a bit of a catch, like they come out like they did. And then I go on to the other one in Germany now.
Where was that before that incident in Normandy? Was that before or after you were at the plane?
That was before the plane. That was actually, it must have been, what, 2 days after Normandy, after the Cold War and that, I suppose. That was after that. It was a small village place, it was, like, you know. But then we moved out of there. We actually, because I can't tell you the place and name, because I don't really remember the places, like, you know. Then, do you want me to go to Germany?
Yes.
So I went to into Germany, and my friend, we used to call him Spud Murphy, he was a dispatch rider, and he said to us one day, he said, jump on the back of my bike, he said, and we're going to see where all the boys are, all the other platoons, like, you know. So he goes on the back of this bike with him, and we goes down this road, over the crossroads, and we went to the crossroads, and all of a sudden, a machine gun opened up on us, and of course we flew round the back over the crossroads, and of course we were lucky because this machine gun was on fixed lines, all the tarmac shot up in front of us. So he said, we went back home, we shot in this big barn place, and who was in there? This King's Own Scottish Borders, there was about 100 of them in there with this major, and this major said to us, he said, where do you think you two fools are going then? We said, well, we're coming up to see our mates, like, you know, because we hadn't seen them for a while, so. And we said, you know, he said, you've been farther over that crossroads than I ever have, he said, or any of the blokes here, he said. He said, German SS over there, he said, we're waiting for a flamethrower to come and burn them out, he said, because we can't move them. And anyhow, so he said, you're lucky, anyhow, so we said, we know that. So we said, where are the rest of our... Oh, he said, if you go just back out there and you're along the front of those A's, he said, you'll find them all positioned out there with a machine gun, he said, because they're covering them, like. So, of course, we put the bike down, we goes off and walks along the front of the wall, these A's, and there was a sniper there having a go at us while we was walking along. Every now and then, a plop, it hit the wall in front of us or behind us, like, because we kept walking. So if we just stood still, I dare say we'd have got one, but we kept walking. We went up and had a word with the our friends, like, you know, up there, mates, and that. And that was the end of that episode up in that SS lot, you know.
Was that in Germany?
That was in Germany itself, yeah. But I don't know the name of the place, because we moved so fast through there. The only place I can remember is Gok and Udom and all that, those places, like, you know. But as regards the other villages and towns, what was you pass through? Like, and the only other name I could remember was Wiesel, because we were just stationed off there with their machine guns and all that for the crossing, see.
And you never got wounded at all?
No, I never got wounded. No, I was really lucky. It's not, you know.
Which platoon and company were you in Northwest Europe?
In two, number two. Two platoon.
Was that A company?
A company, yes. You find we had 1, 2, 3 in
And then you went to Palestine?
Yeah, I went to Palestine, there, yes.
Can you tell me about
that? Yeah, I'll tell you. Well, we got back to Ghent in Belgium, got rid of all our equipment, and so we got rid of all our equipment, every bit we got. We stayed in this place at Ghent, and we built it in the houses there while we was there for a while, and then we had orders to move, and so we started to go up to load on the... We were going to load on aircraft at Brussels Airport. And the advance party had already got up there, and, of course, they dropped the atom bomb on Hiroshima and that. And so that was our stop. That was our stop then, because we were originally going to Kansas from Brussels Airport. We were going to fly to Kansas. to invade Japan. There was going to be three assault divisions evidently to invade Japan. And of course, we never went there then, but they sent us, we went straight to Egypt, to Alexander. And we got out of Alexander, and we was ferried from nearby vehicles up to Telekabir, which is a big ordnance depot. And we went in one end, and we come out the other end with a complete battalion of vehicles, machine guns, a lot, everything we want, ammunition, blankets. And we went down on the Bitter Lakes for a fortnight and got all our vehicles all up together, and then we made our way from there across the Sinai Desert into Palestine.
What was that journey like?
Well, across the desert, we had to stop every so often to let the tires down because of the heat of the sun and that on the asphalt stuff, or bitumen, it was bitumen on the roads here. The tires used to build up with pressure, so every so many miles we had to stop and go around the tire gauge and check them and let the air out into a pressure gain. And this is what we've done all the way across the Sinai Desert until we got into Palestine. Then we were destined to a place, what they call Gibbet Olger A Company, which was a Coast Guard station with a searchlight and all that on, where the Jewish, what name? Cool, I can't think of the name of them now.
Jugendweilungen?
Cool, I can't think.
Stern Gang,
yeah. They'd already blown this Coast Guard station up there. Searchlight and all that, they'd already been blown that up. So, but we had to still guard it. We went and guarded it for about a month.
What was the name of the Coast Guard station?
Gibbet Olger.
Given?
Gibbet. G-I-V-E-T-O-L-G-A. Olger. And we went from there after about a month to 6 weeks. We moved our way down into Palestine. We went to Haifa. We stayed in Haifa for a short while, and then we moved out to what they call a place, Mount Carmel. And we stayed at Mount Carmel for quite a while. We used to go out on road patrols at night with the carriers and machine guns, because the Stern Gang was going around shooting everything up night times. You hear them shooting here and shooting there, and we used to have to go out and try to track them down where they were. But I mean, we never had no run-ins with them all the time we was there, not the Stern Gang, anyway. And you just hear them firing and shooting. And other than that, they did hang two or three paratroop sergeants in the vineyards, didn't they? They hung them up, but we never come across, you know, any run-ins with them. But then we moved from Mount Carmel, we went to Tel Aviv. And
that's where which was the roughest place you were stationed in Palestine?
Mount Carmel really was.
Why was that?
It was all up on a side of a hill, and it was all in tents, and it was all muddy. We had quite a bit of rain and mud and all that. It was all, you know, really all muddy and that other. But we used to go 8 night times from there on patrol with the vehicles, like, you know, but never caught them. And we moved from there to Tel Aviv, and that's where I was sent from Dimov from Tel Aviv.
Did you ever inflict any losses on the enemy in Palestine?
No, never at all, no.
Did you ever get to know any of the population?
Yeah, well, while I was there, I went to Gaza on a course. And I was there with the paras on a course, there was 50 of us, I suppose, went on this course. And we was there about 4 weeks then at Gaza, and it was all just huts, there were no buildings, such as wooden huts and that. And we stayed there, and I was great friends. And then when we finished the course, I said to them, I said, well, how are we going to get back then? Well, they said, you've got to make your own way back. So they said, there's a bus comes along. So I goes out, because we had a rifle and all that, and gets on the bus, and there was these Arabs on, and there was these Jews on, and they talk to you, you know, like like people talking to one another, like, you know, as friends, there were no enemies against one another at all, you know, I mean, because they always said, well, you got to be careful, you're getting on the bus, but I'll just get on the bus, and I was on my own, and nobody else, and I said to the bus driver, where are you going? He said, come back to Tel Aviv. So I went up back to Tel Aviv in the bus, and I got out to Tel Aviv and said cheerio to them, and there was, well, more or less friends. I mean, there's no, you know, harassment. I mean, they could have been, I suppose they could have been funny me on the bus, only one, like, you know. But it was all these Jews and these Arabs on, and there was no, it amazed me, like, you know.
So you were by yourself? You were the only soldier?
I was the only bloke on the bus. Well, I couldn't, once I got on, I didn't realise that, you know, and the others, they had the transport coming to pick them up. And they was all going different parts of the place. They wouldn't drop me off at Tel Aviv. But then from there I got demobbed at Tel Aviv, see, and...
Did you ever feel unsafe whilst you were in Palestine?
Yeah, very good. It's a good stay, and, like, you know, we had a... Well, we had a Christmas out. I had a Christmas out there in Palestine, and up in at Mount Carmel. That's right. Yeah, I remember I had a Christmas there. I mean, that was a good doing. I mean, the main thing you could hear at night times is there, if you, like, on guard, that was these, what they call the old coyote dogs. You know, yeah, barking in the, around the local fields and all that. They reckon, I never see anyone, but they reckon there's a lot of them about.
But did you ever feel in danger whilst you were in Palestine?
No, never occurred to me at all, you know, there any danger really, no.
How do you feel now about having served at the Middlesex Regiment in the Second World War?
Well, I can say today, like, you know, that I tell a lot of people the same thing, like, you know, they said you was in the army, I said yes, and I said the way that, you know, some of the older people are treated, I said, is really disgraceful, really, like, I'm pension-wise and all this, I said, and I said, today you all have a good life compared with what we had, and I said, there's a lot of young chaps over there, 17, 18 years old, I said, they never saw no life, I said, they would like to have had the life you had today, which is true, I think that's true, when they, like, you know, but... As I go on these collections, normally veterans collections, you know, for the welfare fund and that, you'd be surprised the people that come along and thank us for what we've done. They do, it's amazing, like, you know. And different people we meet, like, I've met German paratrooper, I met a German paratrooper a fortnight ago. And previous that, I met a German reconnaissance pilot, when we was one name, and he come and had word, and he put money in the box for us for our welfare, and... He told us he got shot down on the Thomas Floyd over the channel, and he was just outside of Winchester. He was in a camp there, but he said, I was never in the camp, really. He said, I used to walk around Winchester every day and go to the cinema and all this.
Has he settled in England?
He lived in England, yes.
Are you in touch with him?
No, I'm not in touch. I haven't seen him since. I've said to Bill this year, funny, this year, the first year we haven't seen him come back to the supermarket, because other years he's been here every year and come and shook hands and had a good talk with us, like, you know. And like that German paratrooper, like what we, in Petersfield, German paratrooper, like, you know. I remember on Sunday, come and Bill said he's a German paratrooper, come and spoke to us, like, you know. And he told us, he said, well, I said, how did you get captured then? Well, he said, I had to give in. He said, cool. He said, there was hundreds of Yanks around us. He said, when they captured our place, he said, literally hundreds of Yanks. He said, I wonder where they all come from. But he's, you know, lovely chap, talked to, yeah.